This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on November 15, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next matter on the agenda is the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee request to modify conciliation agreement in MER 3620. Mr. Elias has kindly joined us this morning, and without objection, we have a few questions for you, Mr. Elias.
Okay. Madam Chair. Before we proceed, I'd like to mention the fact that I did have a telephone conversation with Mr. Elias yesterday regarding this matter.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Ms. Lee has a brief presentation
okay.
for the Commission.
Ms. Lee, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. MER 3620, initiated over 20 years ago, concerns allegations that the DSEC violated the earmarking provisions of the Federal Election Campaign Act and Commission regulations. The complaint in this matter specifically alleged that the DSEC's tally program, which allowed an individual donor to tally a contribution to the DSEC in the name of a particular senatorial candidate, resulted in illegal excessive earmark contributions to such candidate. In 1995, the DSEC and the Commission entered into a conciliation agreement to resolve the allegations. The DSEC has now submitted a request to modify the agreement. The DSEC specifically requests that the Commission modify the provisions that require the DSEC to undertake certain ongoing remedial provisions. These measures are subject to no time limit. These measures include refunding or forwarding contributions that appear to be earmarked, providing additional education and training to staff regarding earmarking and tally contributions, implementing procedures to ensure that solicitations for the tally program could not be read to solicit earmark contributions, and including in all solicitations for the tally program a disclaimer that the DSEC does not accept earmark contributions. We conclude that under the unique circumstances presented in this matter, the DSEC has demonstrated that continued enforcement of the remedial provisions of the agreement is no longer warranted. Accordingly, we recommend that the Commission find that the DSEC has fulfilled its obligations of the agreement and that it is relieved from satisfying the ongoing remedial measures.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. We have Mr. Elias and Mr. Burcon with us this morning. Thank you.
Sorry about this. This is a little. There's tape that seems to be giving way. I kid you not. Scotch tape. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
I agree for the most part with the memo that the general counsel has put together, but I want to make sure I understand. There's one part I'm not sure about, and it's a question perhaps for general counsel's office, perhaps for Mr. Elias, because it may turn more on what your client was doing, why the FEC thought it was a problem, and why it's not a problem anymore. The thing that got my attention on page 5 of the general counsel's memo, first full paragraph, actually it's first paragraph, it's a third, the fact that the agreement requires the DSEC to refrain from conduct that is no longer unlawful weighs heavily in favor of a commission determination that the DSEC's ongoing obligations under the agreement should end. I understand the argument that back in the day, you had soft money and other issues that are no longer present post McCain-Feingold. What I'm trying to figure what's no longer unlawful about what's the change here? Because earmarking is still a problem. If you go out and solicit a donor and say, "Give the DSCC money so I can turn around and give it to Senator X," that's a classic earmark. Right, you're not suggesting that that's what you're going to do in any way, shape, or form. This is more of a generalized fundraising thing. So I'm trying to get a sense of what's different now.
Should I say no?
Is there anything different now with respect to earmarking law as opposed to when this murder happened? I don't think so. And I want to make sure I'm reading the memo correctly, because this no longer unlawful could be referring to other changes in the law that aren't specifically related to earmarking. It's kind of an esoteric question, but...
I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, having looked at it again, it probably should have said not unlawful, because, yeah, earmarking... I mean, accepting earmark contributions in and of itself isn't illegal. I mean, you just need to forward it and report it properly.
I misspoke. I meant to get around the limits, right? If the donor's already maxed out to Senator X, and then you hit that same contributor up and say, hey, you can give us money, we'll give money to Senator X, because that way you get around the limits and your solicitation says that. That's but then the reporting issue is a whole other issue. Let me ask a general question to Mr. Elias. The commission, we have recommendations, which is really the conclusion. It's not like a MER where we're adopting a factual legal analysis, so it's not necessarily the analysis of the commission. But just for fun, do you have any concerns with the analysis, or is there any issues that you may see down the road that will not give you the relief you seek or cause issues that may we may not anticipate here today, but you may see because you're uniquely situated to see them because it's your client and your fundraising program?
Yeah, no, I think that the relief granted is what we're seeking. I'm glad you pointed out one of the issues that has been, I think, at the heart of this, and I don't wish to relitigate what was argued with the commission 20 years ago, which is that you can have you can legally earmark, political committees can legally earmark contributions. And therefore, it is simply not a correct statement of law to say that political committees cannot earmark. And to the extent we entered into a conciliation agreement that says we will not and cannot earmark contributions, it's a little bit like a corporation entering into a conciliation agreement in 1995 saying, we won't make independent expenditures, right? Except, actually, I would argue back then we could have earmarked under, as long as it was reported properly and the like. So I think that this gives the relief that we seek. I do think there remains an enduring disagreement between perhaps me and the commission of 20 years ago. None of you were here over whether or not what was happening at that time was in fact legal or not, whether it was in fact earmarking or not. In fact, one of the things that I always found curious, again, and then I'll shut up because it sounds like I'm litigating what happened 20 years ago, is shortly after this conciliation agreement, as you know, Congress changed the law. McCain-Feingold goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, and lo and behold, what is put in the record by the proponents of defending McCain-Feingold?
Your tally system.
But the tally system. Yeah. And the Supreme Court brushes through the tally system like it is as legal as the day is long. And yet, I'm sitting with MER 3620. So it has never been my. We settled the case. I think I'm probably barred from disputing the underlying facts or law. So maybe I should just be quiet there. But I think this gives the relief we want, whatever ambiguity may have existed at the time as to the lawfulness of the conduct.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther.
Thank you. The issue to me would be I'm supporting of this modification. I think that seems to me to be the most appropriate way to do it, is to, you have an agreement, let's modify it, rather than unilaterally just say, it's waived. You've got nothing to go home to except, that, and I think we ought to make it clear what is being modified. So it seemed to me that maybe the best thing to do is to work with the General Counsel's office and come up with a modified agreement and have us look at that. That does that. I think the relief you want should be granted, but I think a modified agreement procedure is the way to do it, that's your request. As I understand it, we would just modify the agreement. Portions of it still remain in full force and effect, but the following paragraph would go out, something to that effect. I don't know quite how you want to phrase it, but I'm just talking procedurally now from my perspective.
Unless you have a Madam Vice Chair, I'm not sure if you were asking Mr. Elias.
Well, I didn't get a response, so I'm not too sure how you react to that. So some other commissioner can go ahead and answer. You decide to give me one.
If the commission wants my views, I'm happy to provide it. But
okay, Madam Vice Chair.
All due respect to my colleague, I actually would not be comfortable with that. I appreciate the fact that Mr. Wise did not come in, and despite a little bit of trying to relitigate history there, in his formal request at least, did not try and rewrite history, go back in time, and make us unwind 20 years worth of what happened. What happened then happened. Whether anybody here would have voted for the same thing is immaterial. I would be very uncomfortable with the commission seeking to reopen 20 years later a conciliation agreement. I think one of the and modifying it. I don't think you want to enter into another conciliation agreement. I'm guessing. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the way I read your request is that you are seeking a change in prospective conduct. You're not seeking to redo or undo something that happened in the past so much as seeking relief on a prospective basis. This is a really unusual agreement. I mean, I was trying to think, and I asked some of the lawyers who've been here longer than I have. I can't remember another agreement since I've been here, and none of our lawyers could come up with another example of an agreement that didn't just say, you'll cease and desist violating the law or you'll comply with the law, but actually imposed an affirmative obligation that is not literally required by the law and regulations. I mean, there's no regulation that says that you have to put, you know, that disclaimer on your solicitations. That was solely a product of the conciliation agreement. And I'm actually not aware of any other conciliation agreements where we sort of impose this ongoing obligation from now until the end of time, and we are talking about a committee that's got a, you know, it's not going to go out of, it's not like a candidate committee that might go out of business and terminate. This is an ongoing committee. It strikes me that that may not have been a well-advised way to construct a conciliation agreement, and maybe there's a reason why we couldn't come up with another example of another one. So I think that's part of the problem, is that the way this was structured, you're under this obligation till the end of time, and it's not a simple obligation just to comply with the rules of the or the law. Does counsel want to correct me on this?
No, I agree entirely with what the vice chair has said. I think it's important to point out, if one looks at the recommendations, that it's not seeking to terminate the agreement nunc pro tonc as if it never existed. Rather, it's simply asking, we're simply recommending that that the DSCC be relieved of fulfilling its ongoing obligation, which is the obligation that the vice chair made reference to. So we're not seeking to unwind the conciliation agreement.
And my understanding from the memo is that there's no regulation or specific policy that allows us to do this, but with four votes, it's fine to do.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Vice Chair?
Well, that's another oddity about this. I'm not exactly sure. I guess the commission can just declare, okay, we're done now. But I think it probably was, it's a very unusual circumstance. We couldn't come up with another example
you know,
of it.
I know this is if I might, is different, but what about the conciliation agreements where we tell somebody that they can't serve as a treasurer any longer for any federal political committee? I mean, that obviously goes on for as long as the person is alive.
No. Usually those are time limited. So I can't recall one that was
like
forever.
There are 10 or there are a significant amount of time.
They're time limited. There could be time years. And those were always for instances where somebody had mishandled funds. Mm-hmm. You know, we had embezzlers. And we thought we were trying to protect other committees from being embezzled by someone who had clearly established they were not careful stewards of the funds that were put in their care. But we don't. I'm not aware of any other agreement that contains some requirement that a committee do something till the end of time. And I think that was probably, as I said, ill-advised. I'm not interested in, and that's why I view this almost as sui generis, that I would be very reluctant to start down the road of saying, okay, we're going to start reexamining every agreement that's that the commission has ever issued, because it just we have to have closure. But as Mr. Elias suggested, if a corporation had entered into a CA with us 10 years ago, and one of the provisions was that they were never going to do independent expenditures, because at the time we thought that was illegal, and perhaps they had done it back then, I think that a corporation who had agreed to that could certainly come back now. I'm not aware of any, but they could, if they existed, come back now and say, well, post-CU, I don't have to, I'm not bound by that anymore, and I can't imagine.
They'd even have to come back.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, they had, but because they promised, if they had actually written something down and said, okay, I will never, you know, I promise you, FEC, I will never do independent expenditures again, I'm pretty sure there'd be 6 votes to say, no, that's right, you don't have to, you're not bound by that anymore. We can't bind you to that anymore. So I think this is, that's sort of the way I look at this. But having said all that, I am very comfortable with counsel's recommendation and prepared to support it.
Commissioner Walther.
Well, Mr. Lassen, you said modify the agreement. What procedure were you thinking of at that point?
I think if you look at our letter, we didn't try to propose what the mechanism was. Instead, we tried to bring it in a friendly, constructive fashion to the attention of the General Counsel's office, and hoped that they would engage in exactly the kind of process they have, which is to think through what are the implications for the agency, what is the right way, understanding this is a relatively unique set of facts, what's best for the agency. So truth be told, you know, I had a client who was trying to achieve a practical aim. We were not trying to force the commission to go one route or another in terms of how it actually achieves that. So we're comfortable with however the commission were to achieve that, including the way recommended by the General Counsel's office.
Any other questions or comments?
Just to apologize for having you wait 2 years for a response to this letter. That's unfortunate. It concerns me that this is still sitting around in our office and that this could be happening in other cases. I don't know what we're doing about it, but certainly this needs to be. We need a better case management system so that we all are aware of what's pending at the council level, at our level.
Any other questions or comments? Is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we approve Council's recommendation as set forth in agenda document number 12-79.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Without objection, we're going to shuffle the order of the agenda a little bit. We're going to move the reconsideration of advisory opinion 2012-25 till the end of the agenda, and also take a short recess after the audit division recommendation on Right March.